Would you like to connect with us? Head to spacedoutradio.com for all your latest show info. Now, back to Dave Scott and SOR.
Welcome back to the third and final hour of Spaced Out Radio. Tonight, I am your host, Dave Scott. Thank you so much for being with us. Tomorrow night on the show, we head towards the Russian mountains. We are talking the Dyatlov Pass mystery. What happened in the 1950s where 11 hikers lost their lives? Teddy Hadiyiska is going to join us at 9:06 Pacific, 12:06 a.m. Eastern at spacedoutradio.com. We welcome back everyone listening in on our terrestrial affiliates, KDUN AM 1030 in Reedsport, Oregon, KZFX 93.7 FM in Ridgecrest, California, WQEE 99.1 FM in Noonan, Georgia, and UPRN 107.7 FM in New Orleans. On the digital side, hi to everyone listening in on Deep Talk Radio and Revolution Radio. Good to have you with us. Don't forget, you can check out our archives at youtube.com/spacedoutradio. Just do me a favor, hit that subscribe button. The Desert Clam has set the password for tonight in the SOR Space Travelers Club. Spaghettification. Spaghettification is your password. Make sure you use it wisely, space travelers, as the clam sets the password each and every night right here on the mighty SOR. Our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you. You can rock out to Bumblefoot, go shopping at our Spaced Out Radio store. It's a great way to support what we do and read up on Captain Shirk's SOR Newswire and so much more. For the final time tonight, we introduce Michel Deschamps. He is the lead investigator for his website, newfours.com, a Canadian UFO website. You want to check it on out. Now, right before the break, you were mentioning about a book on UFOs that you think everybody should read.
Well, that book there is almost as big as the other book I was about to mention, but UFOs and Government and a Historical Inquiry. It was written by PhD Michael Swords and Robert Powell, and it also has a lot of contributors. It's got Bill Chalker of Australia, Barry Greenwood of the United States, Jan Aldrich, who's from Project 47, 1947 in the States, and Klaus Svahn from Sweden, and Vincente Juan Ballester Olmos. I think he's from, I'm not sure exactly where he's from, but they're all good contributors. And like I said, this is a pretty big book, and it's a good, like, it's almost like Ufology 101, because it's from the moment the flying saucers came into being, and then how the military was handling it and who they could pass it off to, because some of them just wanted to wash their hands from it, and they looked into the ghost rockets of Sweden in 1946, and then the Foo Fighter reports were coming in, and very interesting book, very lots of reading, and it's, like I said, it's based on all the accumulated documents that were released either due to a lawsuit or whatever has been posted years later on the FBI website, the CIA website, the DIA, I'm not so sure. But the other book that I got, which is kind of out of the ordinary, because it's entitled Fire Officer's Guide to Disaster Control, and that's the actual training manual for the firefighters in the States. I don't know if it's all 50 states or just a few of them, and it's written by William M. Kramer, PhD, and Charles Baum. And the funny thing is about this book, Chapter 13, Enemy Attack and UFO Potential, basically saying that firefighters would be called in if a UFO were to crash. Who would be first on the scene? Well, initially it would be the firefighters, but nowadays, with whatever radar system the military has, they'd be on site before any civilians could get there, no matter where depending, if the UFO crashes right in the middle of the woods somewhere in the Great North, and there are no access roads, well, then that's a different story. But they want to get there first before any civilians get access, and the firefighters would be initially there, but then eventually they would be told to move away, and then there would be a national security issue. You know, it's the cloak, it's the cover, that the all encompassing cover that they would put now on anything like that. Oh, national security. So that's why there's a clampdown right away on this kind of stuff, and that's why I have my doubts that even Chris Witkowski, even if he was appointed the receivership guy from anything from the DOD, I still don't think he gets all the juicy cases, like if there were to be crash retrieval cases or something to do with radar trackings. I don't even know if he's gotten any of those, but those are the kinds of things that actually would prove once and for all the reality of these things by the radar trackings indicating that they can do like right angle turns at 10,000 miles an hour without heaving, you know, causing anything, no turbulences or whatever. I mean, how many planes have been buffeted by these things and there's no turbulence whatsoever? But yet they have an electromagnetic byproduct where they have knocked planes out of the sky. When they had the shoot them down order in 1952, they had to rescind the order because they lost so many pilots. And I wonder if the pilots have training manuals. I know I have this old publication called How to Identify a Flying Object. And they would have like different schematics. But the funny thing is, on the cover, it would be somebody holding a trash can cover, because in the 50s, it was one of the favorite things to use as a hoax or to fake a picture. It would be just to toss a trash can cover like a Frisbee and take a picture of it. So, but books like this indicates that there's some serious attention being brought to UFOs, which is kind of funny, because then in the eyes of the media, they're not being told this. They're made to ridicule the whole thing, and they won't touch the story with a 10-foot pole unless it's a slow news week.
In regards to sightings and ET contact, are you getting a lot of reports of people coming in contact anymore? Is it up? Is it down from what you've had in the past?
I think it's down. So far I've investigated only one abduction case out of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. And like I said, I think the UFOs have gone on to do something else, or maybe because there's lack of UFO groups. The UFO groups are all going defunct, or people are still reluctant to report their sightings. Some people internalize the sighting as a religious experience or similar to a religious experience, and therefore they don't share it. And other people, they still go with the fact that maybe this is all ridiculous, so they don't be called crazy. So I only hear reports once I've opened my mouth and handed out my cards, let's say at all the local Tim Hortons, for instance, and then that'll generate some publicity and generate some calls or some interest and say, oh yeah, my girlfriend saw this, or like in the case of this young guy whose girlfriend saw the triangular object. But I've gotten very few reports. This is worse than what it's been. And even the newspapers in the 80s and 70s and 60s going back, I mean, reports were almost like on a weekly basis, if not every 2-3 days. Now it's like so far in between, and we have to contend with not only the reports or the misidentification of Chinese lanterns, but you also have those few people who will never believe in this stuff. And then they get in and tell you that it's all crazy nonsense and that I'm wasting my time. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I've had people asking me for a job. And the thing is, people may not know this, but my website's a one-man operation. The late Errol Bruce Knapp gave me the programs to start the website. I had the template up for almost like a couple of days. And then I had already started writing a book, not knowing how to write a book. I'd started writing something. Basically all these newspaper articles in text form. So I did basically copy and paste, and the website was up and running in 2 weeks. And then that's when I started creating all these pages that I wouldn't find anywhere else, like how to classify UFO sighting and distinguish it from man-made objects. So then I went looking for any pictures of all the atmospheric conditions that were ever discovered so that it wouldn't be taken for a UFO report. So I went from there and then cataloged as many alien sketches as I could. And then later on got the permission from the people. Like I finally met Linda Howe and I got permission to ask to use some of her information, as long as I made, and without her knowledge, I actually was giving her free advertisement for her books, because when you go on my recommended reading page or recommended viewing page for DVDs, if they're still available online at Amazon or eBay, that's where I link them to, or their own website. So they actually, people can go and purchase the books, the DVDs themselves. So I created that page, that website on my own. I've got over 1,427 pages, I think. And if there's anything, I'm still, there's a children's section I'm trying to work on, and I could use the help from young kids who could tell me what they want to see on there. I've got links to astronomy websites for kids, trying to make it as interactive as possible, because kids are the future, and they're going to be dealing with, well, even though it seems dead right now, UFO-wise and sightings-wise, I mean, the Chris Rutkowski's stats seem to indicate the sightings are going up from year to year. But who knows what the future is going to be, but the kids are going to be the ones seeing or dealing with a lot more stuff. I mean, if God forbid we were to have all these encounters that would be so convincing again, like where UFOs are swooping down and scaring the crap out of people in the car. I've had that happen not too long, well, a couple of years ago, from a family from Michigan whose boy, young son, was playing baseball up in New Liskeard here in Northern Ontario, of all places. And they had a really, really cool encounter on the way back home to Michigan. And I don't know if they'll ever take that road back again because it's very desolate at night. But Highway 144 going up to Timmins and that area, yeah. And so who knows what the young kids are going to be dealing with in the future. But I want them to be prepared. And so I've had to create a website that would actually cater to everybody as informative as possibly can, a one-stop shop looking place kind of a idea, so that they don't have to look at 50,000 websites. And I'm the only person manning this. There's no team. I don't have job openings, you know. So, yeah.
Well, in regards to ET contact that people claim they are having,
yeah,
I think there's a big difference between people doing it in a dream state where they go to bed at night and then they claim that they got taken, and very much different from, say, somebody who is, you know, hanging out lakeside, having a beer with their buddies in front of a fireplace, and all of a sudden they see a UFO, and the next thing they know, they hear movement in the trees and look around, and there's extraterrestrials standing there. To me, that's a big difference, a very big difference in the type of contact. So when you have that, what I like to call awakened contact rather than the dream state contact, how often in your assessment is that actually happening?
I think it's happening a lot more than people being having the experience while they're sleeping. There's too many cases where people are driving their car. Take, for instance, the story of Alan Godfrey in Britain, the British Bobby. He had an encounter while driving his car and investigating some disappearances of cows. And after his abduction, which he later found out, I mean, here he is like 100 feet further down the road driving his car again. Betty and Barney Hill, same situation too. When they were abducted in 1961, they heard a series of beeping sounds. They black out. 2 hours later, beeping sounds come back. They reawaken, but they're driving their car. And they got home like 2 hours later than they should have been. And I heard many cases like that. Even the case I investigated out of Sault Ste. Marie, the mother, who was a registered nurse, she's probably passed on by now, her ex-husband was out in Maple Ridge, British Columbia. And they've had a time where they actually were coming back from the University of British Columbia, where the youngest daughter was actually an extra on the TV show 21 Jump Street. And as they were heading home, the daughter noticed a UFO above the car, and she says, Mom, drive. And so they get to almost to Maple Ridge. They get at a stoplight. They black out. Then the next thing they remember is pulling into the driveway and her ex-husband saying, where the hell have you been for the last couple of hours? So there's more stories like that. And that's where the media slips and drops the ball. They think it's sleep paralysis. They've had all kinds of different explanations and theories for that. And there's too many things happening that are not that. They're not sleep paralysis. People are out and about when it's happening. There's sometimes mass abductions where you could have seven people or six people get abducted. Actually, you got seven people walking together. This was one case that was reviewed on a TV show called Sightings back in the early 90s, where the six people, the one person went ahead to get hot chocolate ready for the rest of the gang, and the six people get abducted. They appear 2 hours later, and the little kid says, I came out to look for you guys. Where the hell were you? And they had no explanation until they underwent regression and realized that they were abducted as a group. And then many, many cases of mass abductions like that, and not just one or two people together. And so then the funny thing is, it says, I hear experts using abductions in the forefront as a way to prove the reality of UFOs. And abductions, in a way, in a sense, have very, very little physical evidence. There's no footprints of the aliens. There is very little remembrance of the actual happening until years later, when they realize they have to undergo hypnosis for one reason or another, or by pure accident, they get these triggers. I say, don't use the abduction cases as a forefront to explain the reality of UFOs. You got to go based on the physical evidence, the landing trace cases, the sightings, the photographic evidence. Not today, because people will ask me, like, how come you're using old photos on your website and nothing new? Well, unless I know the photographer, I won't put any digital photos on my website, because they can be played with. The photos that are on there, they've been tested to death, and they're negatives as well. And I'd be willing to bet 100-to-1 that anybody coming out now will say, oh, we've got new photographic machine technology. Let's run these pictures again. You're rehashing some old photos for nothing, because they've already been analyzed as being genuine. Like, whether it's the McMinnville, Oregon photos, or the Rex Heflin photos, or there's a few photos, few photographic cases from Canada as well. There's one where the UFO, the saucer, was photographed over one of the mountains in British Columbia. There's also a case in Calgary, Alberta, in 1967, where a nice photographic evidence, and the one guy went after an object that was seemingly dropped from the main UFO. So all these photographic pictures are on my website, and I trust them better than some of the digital photos that can be played with, because now you've got morphing programs on the computer, you've got resizing programs. Unless I know the photographer himself, and Ken Klingbell is one of the men that I know locally, who's not techno savvy whatsoever, had trouble even setting up his Facebook so he can contact me. And he's been photographing and filming some of the amazing vivid colors, like colors you don't see on aircraft. We're talking about vivid pinks, vivid purples, lime green colors that in total darkness, and sometimes like at twilight as the sun is setting, of these objects seemingly fighting each other or maneuvering in weird ways like cat and mouse. And so you have to familiarize yourself with aircraft lights as well, the configuration of lights on helicopter. Aircraft is pretty well the same, whether it's military aircraft or civilian aircraft, the light patterns on them, the international red beacon underneath the belly, the wingtip lights, the landing gear lights. When you see a plane moving away from your eyes, though, there's no lights on the last on the tail fin that will aim towards your eyes as it moves away. All the lights are aimed the other way, and if you're able to make out the wingtip lights, well, then you got a bonus there. But if you see a light source moving away from you, and it's not a star, it's not being hidden by clouds, there's something weird there in itself, because we don't have any remote control vehicles that are simply a ball of light. You know, we have the Phantom 3, the Phantom 4, they have a little bank of red lights on one side and green lights on the other, but themselves, they're not, the whole body is not lit up. UFOs are completely lit up. Their bodies, not all the time, but it's fascinating. And once you get to, I've had to create all these pages to educate people as to what to look for in a UFO sighting, so they don't mistake something man-made for something that's not.
We only got about 3.5 minutes left with you tonight, Michelle, and it's been wonderful. It has flown on by, much like the UFOs, as quickly as they come, they go. When you are telling people who've never had a UFO experience,
yeah,
on how to have one, how do you educate people for them to potentially have their own experience? What do they need to do?
Well, first of all, you don't have a sighting when you want to. It's when, sadly, it's when you least expect it, and when you're least equipped to photograph it. And then if you're bound to get your first sighting, you're probably going to be stuck looking at it in awe and forgetting that your camera is sitting on the hood of your car. I mean, even if you looked at it with your camera and looked through the viewfinder, you'd still pull away your head just to get a good view with your own eyes, because it'd be hard to believe. And if you don't believe your eyes, well, you might as well grab a spoon and gouge them out. Because if you can't trust your own eyesight, then what can you trust? And sightings occur when you least expect it. And you have to stay there sometimes an hour. Like if the sighting is going to last that long, stay until the very end so you can get as much detail as you can. Make sure you got a notepad in your car. I usually try to carry a camera in the glove compartment if you can. Winter is kind of hard because the camera might seize up. But cell phones, I wish they had better optics or something that can actually zoom like extra close so you can actually bring in clarity and not so pixelized and blurry whatever object you're picking out with your cell phone. But people have been able to capture something with cell phones, and thank God those viewfinders, well, the surface area is a lot bigger than some of the viewfinders in these little old camcorders I used to have. Now I have a Sony Handycam, which is a fair size, almost like 3 inches by 1.5 inches size screen, so I can actually view better. But yeah, you don't see UFOs when you want to see them. You see them when you least expect it, and it could be any time of the year. At one time, landings used to occur, oddly enough, only in the fall for some weird reason. Well, the McKillat case took place in May. So, like I said, maybe any time of the year.
Well, I mean, that's a big thing, is people have to spend the time outside.
And not watch sports.
Otherwise, you're not going to see too much. Otherwise, you're just not going to see too much.
It's like the people at SETI. You know, they say there's no reality to this, and yet they're just looking at computer screens with spikes to see if the radio signals are picking up something. I mean, good God. And then when they do go outside, like Jill Tarter did flying with her husband, I guess, in a plane, she couldn't identify. She thought she was looking at a UFO, and it was the moon peering out from behind clouds. An astronomer not even being able to identify the moon behind clouds. What's wrong with that? You know, go outside more.
You got that right.
Instead of spending, So... Yeah,
Michelle, we got less than a minute here to go with you. And my friend, I want to get into how people can get a hold of you, how they can report sightings to you, and where they can find more of your research.
Well, they can simply go to the website, which is www.newforce.com. And New Force, if you didn't say it before, although it encompasses a lot more than that, it stands for Northern. It's the first letter of each word, Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study. And my phone number is listed there. I have no bones about that. I used to have my phone tapped back in the early 90s, but I don't care. I'm at a point where I'm just ticked off at the secrecy. And like I said before, I think sometimes, in some cases, copyright is synonymous with censorship. And so if you want to bring people on the same page, don't hide your information. Make it available. But I see all these sites that are going down, and the information is disappearing too fast for me to even grab it before it goes. And I don't just grab something without listing the source. I list the source because it's a protection that way. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on Spaced Out Radio tonight, Michelle. We'll bring you back on very, very soon. Coming up next, we have the SOR Newswire and the Thought of the Day. Stay tuned as we take you home.